and the fumbles. It's the one across the hall. If you don't answer, I'll just ring it off the wall. I know he's there, but I just had to call.
Leave me hanging on the telephone.
Welcome to Talk Back with Attitude, your chance to have your say on the issues of the day. Call 3CR on 9419 0155. If you're involved with a campaign or rally, let people know what's going down across the town by calling 9419 0155 and Talk Back with Attitude.
Oh, good morning. So this is not Joe and you're not Pat.
I'm not.
No.
But I'm Regan.
Not even close to it.
Hello.
So here we are in the studio on International Day for People with Disability. I'm Liz Wright. I'm joined by Helen Gwillem and Regan. Surnames escaped me.
Regan Bleachmore.
So we're in the studio today and we're wanting to have a different talk back today, but we know that you've tuned in to hear Joe and Pat and the gang. Don't be scared. Just because we're talking disability, ring us up. I'm a little bit interested in media and basically the lack of representation of people with disability in media. So all day long on 3CR today, 12 and a half hours, we're dedicating our time and space to people with disability. It's kind of like we've tipped the scales a little bit because there's pretty much nothing. I don't know, do you ever see people, how much representation do you see of people on TV in the movies?
Almost nil unless it's an Americanly produced series, in which case you do tend to see people with evident physical disability, partly because of the nature of their discrimination legislation and the way that their equity rules work. They have a lot more people with disability, certainly in drama, but no, very little on, you know, certainly news and current affairs, not presenting at all, not really being seen as newsmakers, more subject of, is the NDIS going to get funded? That seems to be the only story that's allowed
right.
in.
That's absolutely right. Or we see people, if they are embedded in a show some way, but they have little backstory. So there's little detail about their life. We assume that because they're a character with a disability, that's what takes up all their time.
Yes, and if it's Home and Away, it will be catastrophic, but they will get better by about the third episode.
And maybe meet someone and get married at the beach.
Yes, and arrive on a motorbike, usually.
A sidecar.
Yes.
Because if they're blind, they won't be on the motorbike driving.
I get tremendous hope for treatment for spinal injury from Home and Away. It looks like we've got it sorted.
That's fantastic. Now, look, we'd love to hear from you. Now, of course, we're telling you the bleak side, which is little representation of people with disability. But, you know, let's have a bit of fun with it. Pick someone off TV and replace them with someone else. I've decided to take Carrie Bickmore out of the project, and I'd like to put in Sarah McQueenie, who used to be a co-host on No Limits. Now, Sarah is vivacious. She's intelligent. She's smart and funny. She has a beautiful singing voice. She's a compassionate environmentalist. I think she would work on the project. I think she can read auto cues. You know, so, you know, has anyone got a problem with knocking Carrie Bickmore off?
No, I think I vote for that.
Okay, everyone else okay with that?
Yep.
Anybody else got a character they think they could switch out?
Well, we did have a bit of a discussion on the breakfast show because Raphael decided that Finn was the new disability version of Laurie Oakes, which I wasn't quite sure whether it was actually a tribute in any way at all.
But is that a compliment? Or
I don't know. We're kind of waiting for Finn to go lurking around the corridors of power and getting dirty
information
on
government.
Everybody. That's right. So we're putting Finn up as the new Laurie
Oakes. Okay, so we've got two. So Laurie Oakes, gone. Boom, gone. Out the door.
Yep,
Finn's up there.
Yep,
okay.
He's doing it.
I think Kate Hood, you know, well-known Australian actress. We could just pop her into any show. Now, recently, well, not so recently, a few months ago, Kate was saying that since she became a wheelchair user, she hasn't had a role on TV or film as anything. So not as a lawyer, not as a mother, not as a sister, not as a lover, not as a grumpy prison warden or a prisoner. Nothing at all. I think she could have been in Janet King. She could have been a great lawyer in Janet King. You know, it was a show on TV that featured women prominently.
Yes.
Why not have Kate Hood?
Absolutely.
I don't know. How do you feel about that?
No, I feel good about that. In fact, I think it's bizarre that there are not more people with disabilities in legal dramas because the legal profession is chock full of people with disability.
I know, absolutely. The blind seem to love law.
Everybody, I think if you've grown up with, I studied law, and if you've grown up with a disability, you're pretty much ready for law because you've argued about all of it by the time you're about 18.
Yeah. No, I do want to join the team.
Yeah, I do have rights. I do, I promise.
I object. Okay, we're going to go to a track while you're just ringing us up. But let me just go through the numbers again. Well, where are they? So it's not 94198377, which I put on Facebook, so everybody ignore them. And basically the number is 94190155, or you can SMS 0488 930 855. So we're on at 9:30 and we're on 8:55 AM. Get a clue there. So give us a call. It's Talk Back with Attitude on Disability Day 2015.
Broken veins and broken needles, I'm too tired to make a fist. Charlie Manson sings the Beatles. I should have known it would end like this. Stick it deep and light my candles. Help yourself to my last meal. I've had all that I can handle. Touch me someplace I can feel. In the dream I'm in the desert. I feel the fever from a scorpion sting. It's a burning fire and it creeps like ether. But it feels so good when it warps everything. Life is hard, but death is worth it. Nothing's certain, nothing's real. Give me something cheap but perfect. Touch me someplace I can feel. Night wind wails and the window crashes. It blows my eyes out as I cling to the drain. The nurse is tired and her feet are aching. She's got better things to do with her tape. Oh, sweet Jane, my faithless daughter. Use your blues and let's get real. When I walk, I'll walk on water. Touch me someplace I can feel.
That was John Callaghan with Touch Me Somewhere I Can Feel It, which I love. I'm quite obsessed with him at the moment. He died a while ago, but he was a really prolific songwriter and cartoonist and activist in the States. And I think we have Sarah. Hello, Sarah. How are you?
Well, how are you, Liz?
Yeah, I'm great, thanks.
That's good. I just wanted to join in the conversation about media representation of people with disability. As your listeners may not know, I was the first producer of No Limits, got it started, we first went to air in 2003. And when I look back, you know, there's not a lot has changed, really. We're still not seeing a lot of people with disability on our screens. Maybe a tiny little bit more, certainly a lot more in community radio, but, you know, as far as getting people seen and heard on TV, it's pretty limited. And I think the mainstream industry, is particularly in Australia, is still a bit nonplussed by the whole idea. You know, like, what? Diversity includes disability? Like,
I agree. And look, in my day job in another world far, far away, I fight all the time to keep disability out of the diversity umbrella, not because it isn't diverse, but because it gets swallowed up and lost. And what people start to think of is different coloured people, but not diversity of people or, you know, people from other cultural backgrounds. And disability gets lost again.
Yes, yes. Well, that's true. But, I think people, it's really just not on the radar. And, you know, we did, you know, sort of 12 years of television with, you know, presented by people with disability. And I was always in the hope. I was actually thinking about it last night. And around the same time as we started No Limits, Waleed Ali and their gang started doing Salaam Cafe.
Yeah.
And I look at Waleed's career now and I think, you know, if only we had had some breakthrough there. And I think we sadly got very, very close with Stella Young. And, of course, you know, she sadly passed away nearly a year ago. But we may have, in Australia, had someone who was really cutting it through the mainstream. And, you know, but...
But that's shocking to me too, Sarah, because, yes, Stella was great and, you know, we loved her and she could do multi-platforms, but one person.
Well, oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm totally with you. One person. It was, you know, just one person. And I think there's this sense that, you know, oh, we engage with one disabled person and everything's okay. So, but there's actually loads and loads of people out there who have great talents and skills, but they need to be nurtured and fostered. I've had a few conversations with the ABC over the years about disability. One was trying to get a series about the history of disability rights up. And, you know, this was 6 years ago when I first started working on Defiant Lives, which is nearly finished now.
Great.
And they were like, oh, no, there's no way we're going to do 3 hours on disability. And, you know, even now trying to sort of pitch shows that have a sort of disability focus, they're very nervous about it.
I don't know. I don't know because, you know, it just makes me more and more disheartened in a way because, you know, the marginalised kind of divide seems to not shift at all.
And I think there's two things going on here too. What you were talking about earlier was that, you know, it would be great to just see more disability in our shows. So, you know, really authentic, good, you know, like having Kate Hood in Janet King. That would have been just fabulous. It just would have given it just another dimension, which would have been just great. And then the other side of it is actually to get some more fantastic content that actually addresses disability issues front on. You know, so it's one thing to have, yeah, people are there, they're included, we can see them, we can see that inclusion. But there is also, I think, a need still to have conversations in our media programs, but be they comedy, they can be comedy. They don't have to be serious and earnest. I'm a great advocate of doing stuff fun and funny. But, you know, I think there's two things that are needed and neither of them are happening.
No, you're right. Thanks a lot for calling in, Sarah. That's fantastic. And I'll
look forward
talk
to hearing
to you
the
soon.
Rest of the show.
Okay. See you, Sarah. Bye. Thank you.
And next up, we've got Loretta calling from Port Ferry. It's fantastic listening in Port Ferry.
Hello, Loretta. How are you?
Hello. Very well, thank you.
And what are you ringing up to talk about today?
Well, I'm just ringing up to just give you a bit of an idea. I have a disability with my eyes, and all of a sudden, after having a detached retina and losing the sight of one eye, and then had very little in the other one, I had to learn to cope because I couldn't go outside my house without some support. And for 12 months afterwards, I just sat in my chair and I didn't go anywhere. And then I had a visit from a lady from Vision Australia, and she said to me, I'm going to get you out of that house, Loretta, and she got me onto a walker, and she
picked
a safe way for me to walk to the street.
I think you've brought up a really interesting issue because in Australia, you know, the statistics are that we have sort of a 20% population of people with disability, but we also have people like yourself who acquire a disability a bit later on, like you probably, you know, drove a car and did all, you know, other stuff. And then there's this, you know, different change in life where, you know, you have to relearn how to do things because you can't sit in a chair at home. You've got family, you've got friends, I assume.
Yes, that's true. But for health reasons, you can't sit in a chair when you're aged, and because it's not good for you. And it's the best thing that ever happened in my life. Changed my whole life. And I don't say it's easy because some days it's dark, as you realise, with people with eye problems. That the real thing to get yourself down. But I'm lucky that I live in a little town who are absolutely wonderful. One day I went down the street and a man came along behind me and rushing behind me, and he said to me, "Move off the footpath. You're taking up all the footpath." And I got really sad and I thought, I don't think I can do this anymore. And then I thought, oh no, I'm not going to let that one person tell me that I can't do this anymore, and I continued on. But The people are absolutely amazing in the shops. They help me if I can't find things on the shelf. They are really good. And I don't know if I went to a bigger town. If I went over to Warrnambool, I would be quite nervous. But I'm very lucky to live in a town where people are so supportive of me.
I think that's great, Loretta. I think that's fantastic. And also the familiarity of where you come from, you know, that's a bit comforting, you know, if something changes with how you see or how you move about a place, so that you know what you know where the shops are. People know you. That's a good thing.
Yes, yes. And there's a lot of people like me in this town. There's a lot of people who know I can't drive at one of those things, you know, motorised thing because I can't see. And there's quite a few people in Port Fairy. And people are very kind to them. They are. It's a lovely little town to be in because people accept that. These people have to get around like that and they can't drive their cars anymore. I've never driven a car or anything like that, so those things didn't worry me. But I love people and I want to get out if I go down the street 2 or 3 days a week and get to talk to the people in the shops and come home. That's an amazing thing for my health and well-being to do that.
Oh, that's great to hear. Thanks a lot, Loretta. It's great to hear your voice.
Okay, good.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
I think one of the things that I find has been doing the Disability Day broadcasts for a few years, and I hadn't had much experience of low vision and blindness until we did these shows. And I was always quite fearful of the idea of, you know, losing sight later in life until I met so many people who was like, no, you just learn to get around. And I'm much less fearful of that now, having met so many people who, as Loretta says, you know, there's people there who can help you orient yourself and you can get up and do stuff.
Yeah, look, I think people are adaptable.
Yeah.
You have to be adaptable. I mean, you know, what can you do? Like, yeah. I think it's just...
You can't just sit at home. That's boring.
That's boring, yeah, exactly. Well, unless you've got a pool. That's my dream.
Sitting in your pool.
Yeah, just swimming around.
Do you think with this fear that this impacts on people, this fear of their mobility changing or their sensory perception changing, how does that actually impact on people?
Oh, look, I think unless you've had experience of, you know, disability in a lived way, like, you know, through a member of your family or a close friend or your work, you know, you have a colleague, a lot of people don't ever think about it, and that's why it's a huge shock. It's a huge shock that, you know, the first day they wake up and they think, I can't remember how to tie my shoelaces. You know, I've got an acquired brain injury. I don't know how to do my shoelaces, and relearning things again. And, you know, you really have to – there's a certain amount of shock, trauma, grief, and then people have to really – to succeed, move past that. You know, you can live as a person with a disability very, very well.
Yeah, and part of that is just the environment is set up for that group of people who have been the majority. And that doesn't mean the environment can't be adapted and changed and you can't demand that. You can. The world needs to change so that everyone can get around a whole lot more easily.
Look, simply with disability too, look, if you think about, like, a lot of men have been builders of things like bench tops, you know, machinery and stuff. They build it for their size. Yeah. When women started building stuff and started adapting it for their size, nothing changed. The world didn't stop. You know, we've adapted it. So why not think about adapting anything, you know, anything can be adapted for a person
with
a disability.
Every workplace kitchen I've been in, the cupboards are like for basketballers.
That's right. I've got cupboards in my own home because it's a 1960s home that there's three cupboards above the stove that are empty because, oh, well, there's vases on the bottom shelf because it's like, am I going to be up on a stepladder all the time? What would I store up there? Yeah. I don't know.
And it's so, like, people might be much less concerned or fearful or just better informed if there were more representation of people with disability in the media, because then you just see how people live and get about and get on with life.
Look,
because
the first time on a TV show you'd see someone, you know, wheel over to the cupboard and then get a hook out to get something down, like a tea towel down off a rack, it might be novel the first time, but then it would fade into the background of activity, like it is when we see someone in Home and Away or Neighbours put a kettle on.
Yeah,
we
absolutely.
Don't sit there going, they're putting the kettle on. It's just, you know, you see it as normal.
We've got another caller on the line. We've got Jean from West Melbourne. Hi, Jean.
Oh,
hi, Jean.
Hello. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I suggest that Joe ask his wife to go on the ABC on TV.
Joe suggested you go on the ABC.
Look, I've really missed the lady who was on the TV who represented the...
Was that Stella Young?
Yes.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Well, she's missed by all of us.
For a better...
I agree with you.
I missed her terribly because she confronted us and she was just so, so clever.
Very clever.
One of the cleverest people. I'd like to tell you a story. It was about the 1980s and it brought home to me how politicians really do deal with people with disabilities. I worked in Treasury Place on the integration of the disabled report in the Fordham government. Dan Kerner was on the sidelines and they set up a committee and it had taken the parents of disabled children, many of whom had been born after the war, after the measles epidemic, to actually get to this point. They called me in and asked me to work on this report and I said, look, the one thing I know absolutely nothing about is special education. And they said, that's why we want you to do it, which I think speaks a lot in itself. It was a highly politicised business and I just learned so much from these parents and from these children. And I went into places which I'd never dreamed of, where severely disabled children had been abandoned by their parents, and there were these people who were looking after them, and there was so much love and kindness there. Now, there were a lot of special schools, and they were expensive to run. And there was actually a separate bureaucracy up in Queensbury Street that dealt with these special schools. And in the end, what Joan Kerner and company and others were about was not the integration of the disabled, or not only the disintegration of the integration of the disabled into ordinary schools, which actually should have taken an enormous amount of money. They were about doing away with this alternative bureaucracy and bringing it under the main bureaucracy. It was a power play. It was a pretty terrible experience, I must admit. We did integrate the disabled into a lot of schools and there were a lot of remarkable teachers, but the special schools and were partially gutted. And it was done on $4 million initially. They were going to give us $4 million to do it and I'd costed it at $54 million. Now, this is 1983-84. So the disabled have got to learn not just to fight for themselves, but not to be bought off on committees set up by Labor government.
Yay! I love you.
Are you interested in the story?
Yes.
I'll keep going.
Who can we trust, Jean?
As a good little two-shoes bureaucrat into the deputy director's office. And a lot of these people are dead now. And I was told that I had to, although I'd costed it $54 million, there was only $4 million. And the chairman said to me, you watch how I'll put this committee into shape, because we've only got $4 million. And I just looked at him. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Well, all of the bureaucrats and others whose jobs were on the line, they towed the line, but there was a parent representative. Her name was Jane Reedy. She was a little terrier. And there was another woman. Oh, there was another man who was representing the teachers. I think his name was Costello. I can't quite remember his name. But he was good too. And they could see that they were being done. So they got up and fought, as representatives should.
Yeah.
But I think the most they got in the end, there was a change of... Joan Kerner left and went to become the Premier. She took over from Fordham. And then there was another lady, Hogg, who became the Minister for Education, and she gave them $19 million. Mm-hmm. But the special schools, a lot of them were gutted. And then, of course, when Kennett came into power, he did away even with Willsmere. That's now, you know, upmarket housing.
Well, a lot of the old schools are upmarket housing.
And that place I was telling you about where I've never met so much love and kindness was St Nicholas's up in Carlton, and that's now big upmarket apartments too. So the people involved in this business, it's a bit like all of the people in our community who are underprivileged. When they are dealing in the corridors of power, they just have to understand they have to fight. They must not be duchessed by anybody. They have got to go into committees and they've got to fight and they've got to fight and they've not. In fact, it's better for them not to on these committees, because every time they set up a committee, particularly the Labor Party, they will have the numbers.
And all right, Jean.
And you'll have a lot of hope, and you'll be made to feel terrible if you stand up for the people that you're representing.
All right,
that
Jean.
That was my experience.
Thank you so much for sharing that today. That's great. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And next up we have Oscar from Blackburn, who has, I think, a bit of a vision for his perfect world.
Hi, Oscar. How are you going?
Good morning. Good morning. Privilege to talk to you, young girls.
Flatter us.
Let me be a bit...
Just call us prone.
Citizen Oscar, what have you called it up today?
Look, the topic that you are... broadcasting this morning is a topic that really concerns everybody for the simple reason that no one is immune to a disability. You might be born with it or you acquire later on. Let me expand this scope because, you know, there are so many reasons for it. But to discriminate, well, look, unfortunately, we live in a world that everybody expects perfection. Plus, it's the culture of a media to some degree that portray these personalities, these characters, perfect, the plastic way of... look, let me just expand this a bit. Take the case of the young girls. From from very early age, somehow there is this culture to encourage them to somehow look so slim, to have this, even the color tone of their skin has to be tanned. However, we dislike some people that are born with so much sun tan, don't we? And look, I think more than anything else, in order to accept whereas we are born like that, we had to really start at very early age. And I think it starts with education. And this education begins, whether it's an institution, whether it's at home, whether it's all the forms and mediums of somehow spreading that we had to change. Simple as that. We had to accept as we are, and everybody should be inclusive, not exclusive. Unfortunately, that's the reality. But nevertheless, I am optimistic slowly, slowly, we are changing.
I'm glad you've brought that up because I think we're talking about lack of representation of people in media, but then the media representation is a very narrow view of white, slim. You know, there's a certain look and a certain finesse to them that is just like it's unappealing and bland to me particularly. But generally, if people have to aspire to that, I mean, it's ridiculous because, you know, people are far more interesting in their flaws and all than, you know, a little coiffured, cosmetic-ed up, you know, kind of look.
Well, that is the that's what I've been saying. Mm. But nevertheless, look, my aim is to... somehow accept things and start really showing as there is. And definitely, with optimism, we could change. Or we will change, I had to say. We will change.
Thanks. And I like your optimism, Oscar. That's great.
And ladies, having said that, I wish you and I bid you a good morning. And hopefully you get to come back. I love this sort of a topic.
Thank you. We will. The three of us ladies in here. We'll be back.
We'll be back.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, Oscar.
Enjoy your ball. Cheers. Bye.
And that was Oscar. We've had an SMS, I guess going from optimism to something a bit more thoroughly depressing, but an SMS from a caller wanting to express their sorrow. In solidarity with people, that the news coming in this morning of a what has been called a domestic terrorist attack or a shooting in California, which has happened at a centre, I think it was called a Centre for Developmental...
It's called a social delay. Service. I was listening to that on the radio on my way in.
Where people with disability went every day. And there also seemed to be basically an event happening at the day I was looking at the news before I came in of councillors. And so it's quite a big centre. We're not really quite sure what the target was, but there's 14 dead.
And it was a multi-level building, so it was quite difficult for people to leave.
Yeah, so it's a Christmas party, I think, that was going on. And so another shooting that at a centre for people with developmental disabilities in California. And I guess given the history of gun violence and particularly what's been going on this year, it's hard to see that as necessarily targeting anyone, but other than just more examples of terrible gun violence.
Yeah. Well, thank you to that SMSer for bringing that to our attention. And, yeah, commiserations and, yeah, deep sorrow.
Yeah. What can we say that's a bit more encouraging than that, I think?
Okay, well, earlier this year I went overseas, but before I went overseas I was spending late nights up doing my research for my trip, and while I was doing that came across The F Word. So The F Word was a show which was on Channel 31, again, community TV and radio leading the way,
yay,
you know, in front of everybody else. And The F Word was a really interesting show, primarily female-based show, where they talked about feminism in all its wildness and glory, you know, all different perspectives. But it was interesting because the show showed lots of women with visible and some women with invisible disabilities on the air. And that was actually just so engaging for me, just to see people that I sort of see all the time, but, you know, on the air talking about something else. It wasn't disability focused, although disability was covered. So, you know, big nod to Naomi Chamey. She was the producer, I think, producer and director of that show, and also co-hosted it sometimes. So you can probably get an opportunity to look at that, have a look at it on YouTube. Did you watch any of it?
I did, but it also made me think, now you're talking about it, that, you know, obviously community television is under attack in Australia. And if that's one of the places where people who are different get to be seen and heard and to speak, where is this going to happen now? I mean, the government's answer is, you know, you go off and you do it on YouTube. But that is by no means an easy way to communicate in the same way as television.
It's also, I think, by siphoning everything off a mainstream kind of production, like a site, means that everything's siloed in a way. So on this overseas trip that I was on, because I was looking at media, looking at disability, government, the arts, you know, through a disability lens, pardon the visual pun, but a lot of stuff is being podcast, a lot of stuff is being YouTubed, and there wasn't a lot. You know, on telly, on the radio waves. I could not find a disability radio show, half an hour of talk about disability at all. And I was in the UK and the States. So, yeah, I think we need to keep our community TV stations. I think we need to keep our community radio stations, of course.
Yeah. I mean, 3CR does have a history of representing voices of disability and has done for 40 years in lots of different shows that have been very disability specific. But you don't hear very much of that on any other radio station.
No, not at all. So on 3CR we have, like, I do another show, and that's a weekly one-hour talk conversation show from 4 to 5. I'll be back later on today. We have The Boldness, which is on half an hour a month. We have Small Talk, which is on half an hour a month. We have
Brainwaves.
And there's one other show.
We've had Raising Our Voices. That's been going for more than 25 years now. That's an amazing show.
Yeah, so I challenge anyone to call in now and see if they can tell us where anybody else is doing that kind of representation, because I just don't think anyone's doing it as well as 3CR. You know?
No, and I think often what happens is, particularly when you do projects and you ask people, whether it's 3CR or I've done other different projects at work designed to try and increase disability where I work or where I live, and people often say, but I don't know anyone with a disability. And you have to spend all this time, like some kind of weird dating agency, kind of introducing people. Yeah. Hello, able-bodied person, disabled person.
Yeah.
One day, when the war is over, our countries can live as one.
No, but apparently from breakfast this morning, everyone's moving to, is it Cripland?
No, Planet Crip.
Planet Crip.
Yeah, that's Finn's new solution. And Raphael decided that basically, I think he'd been seeing The Martian and decided that we were pretty adaptable as people with disability. And so whether it's, you know, any film you care to mention that is set on another planet, we could probably do Mars Attacks with no trouble at all.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be so good.
So I think Raphael and Finn's idea was, like, we're more adaptable than everybody else. Come climate change, we're off, we're ready. We know how to do anything on,
we
you
just
know,
can't get public transport there.
We'll have to do some crowdsourcing on the old kind of rocket fuel, but, you know, it'll be good.
That's true. Regan.
Yes.
Can we hear a song?
We can.
I would love to hear something.
Accept It by the Shutterways?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Fantastic.
All right.
Well, I accidentally stabbed myself in the finger with a fork. So I don't know how well this is going to turn out, but here it goes.
So that was The Shutterways. I hope you enjoyed that. That was Accepted. And who have we got on the line now, Helen?
We've got Finn from Collingwood who wants to talk about disability representation.
Hey, Finn, how are you?
Hello. How are you going?
Yeah, good.
Lovely to be joining you.
You're touring me.
Well, I could be touring you, but I think I'm joining you.
Oh, joining me.
Or am I touring you? What am I doing?
I don't know. It's a bit too intimate for me.
What would you like to talk about, Finn?
Well, I thought you've been leading the discussions about disability representation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been thinking that we really need to have more people represented. Like, I mean, I'm thinking a good person at least is the guy from Breaking Bad, RJ Mitte,
yeah,
who came out and spoke about he was very good at putting the disability agenda on the map.
Oh, he was. He was great. Like, you know, and here's the thing that I thought about him too. Yeah, he's a guy with CP, cerebral palsy, but he was actually a good actor too. It wasn't like we'll just do a product placement. Oh, person with disability, we'll plunk them in here. He's a good actor, got the role, and it was fantastic.
But also we need people, we need to really encourage, I noted you were talking about Home and Away and those sort of generic sort of shows that always seem to be on TV. We need to encourage more people with disabilities to be, or more actors with disabilities to be on screen.
And absolutely.
With casting agencies and stuff like that. It's not just good enough for actors to back up. They need to, they really need to, they really need to have a true representation of disability, and I think that only comes from a lived experience. Because let's face it, Liz, not everyone can do spazzy mouth as well as as well as people with disabilities can, Liz.
Oh, yes, I agree. Mm-hmm. Look, in the States, one thing that I think they do really well is that they have casting agencies that are specifically around disability. So there's a Down syndrome casting agency called Get Down, and that works really actively to get people with Down syndrome on Broadway, in movies, on TV, and they're actually quite feisty and do quite well, which I reckon is amazing. Here's a job opportunity for someone in Australia.
it certainly is if it needs to really present itself. And I think the more people we have with Down syndrome and with disabilities that we don't see, the better off we are.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling in, Finn. Okay. That was great. Thanks.
Can I go now?
You can go now.
All right.
Thank you.
It's been fun.
Thank you.
And next up, we've got Naomi from Brunswick, who's going to follow up with your discussion about the F word.
Oh, hi, Naomi. So thanks for calling in. It's great. We were just talking about the F word.
Yes, I heard. Yeah.
So well done you. Like I was saying, I was up late watching TV. I'd seen a little bit about the F word on Facebook, but I just sort of wasn't sure when it was coming or what was happening. And then I was just really, really pleasantly surprised to see the diversity of women, primarily women were on the show. And it was great. And it wasn't really like... to me, it wasn't a big deal. It was like, well, it was. I was excited, I have to say, to see diversity, but it wasn't a big deal. It was like everyone was doing their job.
Mm. And I think, I mean, because my background is working on No Limits, which is obviously Channel 31's disability show. So a lot of the people that I met through there were actually feminists with disabilities, people like Jax Brown and Ashley Waite and... people that we had on the show. So I think I actually had this incredible sort of variety of women with disabilities to choose from who are very knowledgeable about sort of feminism as a whole, not just the disability side of it. So that was just incorporated into the show in a way that really worked for all of us, I think. Yeah.
And how many episodes did you actually put out?
It was 13 in the end, and I think all of them, I can say, had someone with a disability in them. We had one episode that was specifically about women with disabilities, and we had a panel of four of us who have disabilities. But we had disability representation throughout, though. So
Oh, that's amazing! Is there plans in? You know, do you have plans for a second series, a follow up series at all?
That's going to depend on funding.
Of course.
Yeah, as these things always do.
Well, it's pretty energy draining too, isn't it?
To do that, I mean, I've talked about this on the show as well. I have chronic fatigue syndrome. So I have to be very careful about how much I actually, you know, do any given year. So the F word was kind of my big project for this year and,
Well done. How was the idea conceived? How did you get around to doing the production side of, like, you know, what happened? Its origins.
Well, it was conceived, I guess. It was actually at a disability event. Liz Carr was speaking at Loop. She's an incredible actress, actually. If you want to see a good disability representation, Liz Carr is in
Silent Witness.
Crime show, Silent Witness. Thank you. Yeah.
So she's what's her name? Not Cressida. Clarissa. She's Clarissa, the forensic psychologist in Silent Witness.
And that's done very well in that show. They've actually, she's in there, but it's not a big deal. It's just normal, which it is in real life.
Well, she is actually she is actually working on her character. I interviewed her in London just recently, and she's been wearing a wedding ring on screen, and nobody's taken up any option to engage with her about her private life. So she's really working on developing her character into something bigger than the lab.
Yeah, which I guess is difficult for any sort of crime lab character you've got to kind of on those sorts of shows. She was speaking at an event in Melbourne, and there are a group of us who were at that event who were women with disabilities who are also feminists, and we got talking at a pizza place afterwards, and that was where the show actually started. So
From humble origins.
But it was actually started by a group of women with disabilities. So
that's brilliant.
Thanks,
Naomi. Thank you so much for calling in, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Liz.
Okay, bye.
You're listening to 3CR, Talk Back with Attitude. Give us a call. The number is
written on a piece of paper.
Is
94190155.
And it's 0488 930 855 if you want to text in and leave us a message.
So I've just been thinking a bit more about who to switch in and out on your idea, and I've decided that I want Karen Howe to host 7:30 Report instead of Lee Sales.
Mm. Oh, God, that'd be good.
It would. Karen knows lots. She's tremendously elegant.
Yeah, she is. So for those of you at home or wherever
those
you are.
You playing at home.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's number 14. No, so Karen Howe is the executive officer and founding member of Women with Disabilities Victoria, and she's recently just won the National Disability Award, the Leslie Hall Award in the National Disability Awards.
Well, a lifetime achievement.
Yeah, and she has done a lifetime of work for furthering the work for women with disabilities.
Yeah, so I would like to see her, and just because I think he would love it enormously, I think we have to put Kurt Fernley in Mission Impossible.
He would love that.
He would. He would have
he
a
would
ball.
Love that. He would
and just... he can grin just as well as Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
He's got the teeth.
And he's uber fit.
He is uber fit.
Yeah,
He can go anywhere. You can't stop him.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Would he be his own stunt double?
I think it would be almost impossible to prevent him.
His story with Julius Samaras was pretty amazing, where he lived as a kid and just zooming around the countryside, like rolling down hills with his mates and stuff like that, and just, you know, his mum yelling out the back door and him coming home kilometres for tea. It was amazing. Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I did too. I think he's becoming a really kind of much more rounded personality. He's had so much more coverage, and it's a real kind of double-edged sword, isn't it? Because I think somebody else was saying earlier, like Stella was the one, I think Sarah was talking, and you end up with the one person with disability representing everything. I don't think that's happened to Kurt, but it's a danger, and that's why you need so many more people, because people have so many rich, varied experiences to share.
Well, interestingly enough, the last interview I did with Stella Young, which was November last year, you know, sort of just in the month before she died, she had been working on a sports show with Kurt. So they were doing a radio talk show about sport, and which we both found hilarious because Stella was not the least bit sporty. But Kurt was carrying that, and I think they, you know, they had a nice rapport.
We had an SMS from Sue in Sunshine who said, you know, she's right. She's agreeing with the discussion that people really need to, or the world needs to adapt to be more inclusive, and that people who control the funding and the news, how can we go about pressuring them to make sure that we are included? How do we do that?
I'm more and more convinced, just going back to that interview of a year ago where Stella and I discussed direct action, and my response at the time was, oh, I just don't think I can, because it would be a logistical nightmare, like leaving work early, picking up my daughter.
I don't know. Do I have time for the revolution? I'm really sure.
I'm busy. Yeah, no. Well, for me, that was the first thing that came into my mind, and I have been active in protesting and stuff in the past, but really, it was sort of a life stage comment that I made back, which was really in defence immediately of how would I fit in the revolution. And just in the last year, I actually think nothing's going to change unless something dramatic happens. Yeah. I just actually think there needs to be some dramatic action.
One of my favourite ever protests, and this is, I guess, more of a reflection of the civil rights attitude in the US, was in 1974, and there was a sit-in at a federal building because the federal government had not brought in regulations that would require federal buildings to be accessible. And there was this planned sit-in, and people, activists with disabilities, sat in the building for 2 weeks in a protest. They had support from the Black Panthers, who did the catering, which must have been fabulous. and the unions were like pumping water in. It was like completely set up. And one of the best stories out of it was the first sat in the office of one of this director who hadn't signed off these regulations. And after about a couple of hours, he said, oh, I really need to go to the toilet. And they said, well, we can't, so you can't.
Yeah.
And you kind of think, well, that's really ballsy. But, you know, sometimes that's what it takes.
I actually feel like a bit of a smart ass. Sorry, language warning. But I just interviewed Stephanie from Adapt in Texas.
Oh.
And she was the first person to get out of her wheelchair and climb the steps.
Doing the
to
the,
inhabit
the Capitol that. Hill crawl.
Yeah. So she inhabited the building. She was the first person. And it was highly organised. And part of my conversation with her, which will air on 3CR a bit later in the year, is that a protest like that is so highly organised, but it doesn't look it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. We've got another caller. We've got time for a couple more. So Kate from Seddon is calling in.
Hello, Kate.
Hi. I'm really glad you're talking about this. This is really important to me. I just think that, you know, one of the big issues about disability and disability awareness is that very often, you know, most people's consider disability to be something they can visually see, you know, someone's blind or they're in a wheelchair or whatever. Mm. But, you know, there's a whole community of people out there living with mental illness that isn't so obvious. Obviously, some people it is obvious, but
yeah,
many people it isn't. And the way the NDIS has been structured, it doesn't really meet the needs of people who've got episodic mental illness. And also, the funding of the NDIS, as much as it's been focused around people's, you know, individual plans, and that's a fabulous thing, is actually costed at being like this really low-level job, which is actually really unfair for the people receiving services.
So, just explain a little bit more about the costing. So they've done the funding at the rate of like an entry-level position.
Yeah, that's right. And that's because, you know, I think in a way, because it replaces, you know, the attendant carer type role, which was if you've got a physical disability and you have someone come and help you shower or get into your wheelchair or, yep, or cook a meal or whatever, you know, it's a completely different thing to working with someone with a mental illness and helping them, you know, sort of work out their life plan or, you know, developing skills to cope with their anxiety in a group or,
yep,
you know, those sorts of things.
It's very different and it shouldn't be calculated in the same way. And even by saying the word calculated, it sounds cold and rationalist in a way.
You know, the whole of the NDIA is based on a financial model. And that's a big issue. It's going to be a big issue. It's always been an issue for anyone with a disability and needing community support, but it's going to be a really much bigger issue for people moving into it from out of the generalist mental health support sector.
All right, Kate, thanks a lot. That's great for bringing that to our attention. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
And next up we've got Susan from Moorabbin who wants to talk about intellectual disability on TV.
Hi, Susan. How are you going?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, great, thanks.
I just want to talk about the people with intellectual disabilities are not shown in a positive way on TV or on film.
I agree.
Intellectual disability by itself is a lot like mental illness.
Mm.
And I thoroughly agree with what the last caller was just saying. For people with high functioning intellectual disabilities, we're very scared of what support, if any support, will be out there for these people who do need some support and often have no support.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really, difficult problem because around intellectual disability, around mental illness or mental health, there is so much stigma and so much demonisation of both areas that how can it be captured in a more sensitive way where people can get, you know, the independent lifestyle that they want?
Exactly, and have our voices heard as well. So,
well, thanks for being
heard.
People
come out and ask us what we think and feel instead of asking our carers or
exactly
our family.
Yeah, right on. Thank you so much. It was great to have your voice here today. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we've just got a few minutes left, Liz.
Well, first of all, I'd really very pleased that people rang in today. It's always a bit scary thinking I will do talk back on a, you know, disability topic because as much as we bang on about it all the time, you know, often people don't engage with us. So first of all, thanks to all the callers that rang in. That's brilliant. Secondly, I'd like to thank Helen and Regan and Gab and Annie. That's fantastic. Our team here at 3CR, that is, you know, it's fun to work with everybody and to be here on this particular day. And keep listening. We have 12 hours in total of broadcasting today. We're probably up to, what have we got left, Helen? I can't do the maths.
Me neither.
8 hours left.
Till around 6:30.
Yeah, till around 6:30. So thanks a lot. And I'll talk to you at 4 o'clock today on Are You Looking at Me, where we have a special guest, Christine Stowe, coming in to promote and talk about her book and her life. And see you all. Have a great day. And ring in next week.
Yeah, ring in all time. If you're a person with disability who's listening today,
just ring in.
Listen.
Get
Joe
to talk about it. Yeah, get Pat to talk about
every
it.
Every week.
Let's absolutely keep it up.
I really don't like this concept of teaching people to see the person and not the disability. Then why can't people see a person with a disability and not freak out or not feel uncomfortable? You know, it's like that weird backhanded compliment that we get when people say, you know, oh, I don't think of you as disabled because you're my friend or you're really cool or because you're just like me. And can we not be all of those things? Can we not be cool and likeable and people's friends but not also be proud of our disabilities? I kind of hope that we can.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.